Attention, lovers of speculative historical romance literature.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 588 for the week of November 10th, 2025. I am Vending Machine with Real Products Inside, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Big Fan of Mindless Crap, Sarah D. Bunting.
Can we talk later? Carol at First Sight is on.
Undersecretary for Agriculture for Farm Production and Conservation, Tara Ariano.
No one is in charge or everyone is in charge.
And Mizzen Mass Mizzen Splainer, Jeff Drake.
How long is the wait in this ER? Hello?
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, he's a writer you've heard with us many times before. It's Jeff Drake. Welcome, Jeff.
Hello.
Jeff.
Hello.
We're here to talk about Pluribus. Carol Sturka, Rhea Seehorn, is a successful romantasy novelist whose feelings of constriction in her genre have apparently led to some problem drinking. But none of her old complaints in life seem that serious after her partner Helen, Miriam Shore, and every other person in her hometown of Albuquerque, and in fact, every other person in the world other than Carol and 12 other individuals, undergo a radical mood shift. Is the right choice for Carol to become as happy as they are, or to fight like hell to remain miserable? The show was created by Vince Gilligan, formerly of Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. Only two episodes dropped so far on Apple TV last Thursday night and promptly crashed platform, apparently. We got access to more, but we'll be careful about spoilers. Let's do the Chen check-in. Jeff, should our listeners watch Pluribus?
100%, yes.
Sarah?
I'm at more of a 90, so yes, but, and we'll talk about it.
Dave?
Yeah, I'm at about a 75 on this one.
I'm the Carol Sturka of not liking Pluribus. I don't like it, and we can talk about it.
Oh, fun.
Now that we're in the spoiler zone, we can explain the phenomenon that has happened on Earth. A biological entity that is kind of like a virus, but not really, has spread throughout humanity, and everyone who is infected becomes part of the joining into the same hive mind, meaning every individual has all of the knowledge of every other member of the joining. So a TGI Friday server can co-pilot a plane, or a DHL driver can perform surgery. There are, as I said, only 13 people on Earth who are not affected, and the hive mind doesn't know why, but they're working on figuring it out so that Carol and everyone else can be as blissful as everyone in the joining. It is not explicitly a meditation on AI, according to Vince Gilligan, but it does have a lot of features in common with Mrs. Davis, which was about that. It also has some things in common with The Last Man on Earth. That's what's happening now that we're out of, in the spoiler zone. You know. So we've seen a lot of fictional apocalypses over the years. What does this one bring to the tradition that made it compelling for you, Jeff?
I love any apocalyptic drama or comedy, really, where I get to see the apocalypse unfold.
Right.
The first half of the Stephen King book, The Stand, is like the most terrifying. Second half is garbage. A really, really terrifying, like plague spread kind of thing. Same thing with like Andromeda Strain. And what I really liked about this one is that it's so different from those, not just in the fact that this is something that came from somewhere out in space and that it spread basically by kissing, I thought was kind of great. Just the whole way that unfolded just was really entertaining to me. And I was like, oh, okay. I feel like I'm seeing something fresh and new, which doesn't surprise me because I think Vince Gilligan is a very, very good writer. Also, the other thing is this is a big, big idea. And I think in other people's hands, I would be like, yeah, but I mean, are they going to stick the landing of these ideas? Mm-hmm. And I have full confidence that Vince Gilligan, like when there's small details, they matter, they add up to something. There's no like, oh, well, we just decided not to explain the polar bear.
Sarah, was the apocalypse part of the 90% that you are on board with this or the 10% where you're sort of like, I don't know?
It's really more about expectations. 90%, like that's still an A minus and that's still really good. But I just kind of want to caution people who are like, it can't be as good as the reviews say. Like, I mean, I think it can be. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people seem to sincerely 100% love it. I don't think that's wrong, but I think the genius of it has maybe been a little bit oversubscribed in reviews. And the apocalypse world building I thought was good, but the show also thinks it's good. I have always loved Rhea Seehorn and thought she was underrated and needed a showcase. You know who else thinks that? This show. Mm-hmm. And I just kept thinking, like, not that it's not well made and not that it's like the shot compositions aren't compelling, but nobody thinks that more than the show. Mm-hmm. And that made it feel a little studied and slow and self-regarding to me at some points. I am not new to the Rhea Seehorn for president of acting train. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of kept thinking, like, why wasn't this, say, an X-Files episode or a movie? Like, I think it needed to be a movie. Mm-hmm. Not to bang that drum, and I'm not going to quit watching it, but I just kind of felt like, yes, Seehorn should have won Emmys for Better Call Saul. She didn't. This is a little too awards-baity for me in terms of the pacing and its own kind of self-regard. Like, yes, okay, another mirror shot. We know you know how to do this, boyo. Mm-hmm.
I agree with Sarah that sometimes that you can tell that the show is very pleased with something. But I think the most telling episode for me of how this is going to sort of land as far as audience versus the critical mass is there's an episode towards the end of this first season that reminds me of the very divisive first episode of season 3 of The Bear. Mm-hmm. Is not doing very much as far as moving the plot along. It's just all style. Vibes. It's just all look at what we're doing with this moment and how we're expanding it. And that's part of the Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul shtick and the reason why a lot of people like it when it takes its time with those moments instead of barreling through the this guy's angry because or this guy is trying to figure this one thing out, but they take 3 or 4 or 5 minutes in a long speechless scene in one of those. This is a whole episode of that. And I feel like that's indicative of where this series is going to land with a lot of people. Like, it is taking those moments that you sort of enjoyed in isolation here and there in previous shows, and it's really kind of running with it. Mm-hmm. And either that pacing and that patience with everything is going to work for you or is going to possibly grate on you. I will admit I miss those rhythms in like when we got the first couple in the first two episodes. So like, oh, I like it when they just like, why are we in the Middle East? What's going on with this lady? Why is she now stop helping collect the bodies and now she's in a truck and now she's flying a plane? Like that whole sequence, I like that stuff about Vince Gilligan shows. But 45 minutes of it, maybe somebody needed to tell him no.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Once in a while. So the show, I feel like, is leaning into like itself a bit much at times, but I am enjoying the ride. So that's where my 75% comes from. It's just like the artifice of it sometimes. It's like, oh, it seemed deliberate more than perhaps Breaking Bad did.
Yeah. My issue is with it is something that I've said about a lot of other Apple TV shows, which is it's about including Severance. It's about an abstract idea of happiness that is entirely divorced from material conditions of the characters or politics, because those are divisive and that's what Apple's trying not to get into. They want to, you know, sell sneakers to everybody, as it were. The last two episodes that were not released to critics might turn it around, I guess. I'm going to finish it, but I find it frustrating that, like, there's just this huge blind spot in Apple programming, and this is like the latest example of that.
Can you explain that better? I don't quite understand what your problem is with the happiness as portrayed in this show.
Because I think it just treats it as something that's completely theoretical. It doesn't really get into a lot of the reasons even why Carol is not happy, other than she's like frustrated in her job. When we see her in like other flashbacks to her earlier life, she's just like kind of a grouch. Like, just is not joyful. And what I feel this show is trying to do is sort of put it back on the audience, like, well, if this is you, why can't you just decide, like all of these people in the joining did, to be happy? You know what I mean? And that feels like kind of condescending and also kind of simple-minded to me.
Does it feel like, for you, it's stripping the show of like a point of view that would make this land more? Is like that what you're saying?
Yeah, sort of. It sort of takes even out of the struggle of what it would be like to be Carol out of this, because all of her needs are still being met by the hive mind, essentially.
Right.
So it's like there's not even stories about like, how do I get electricity to work, or like whatever, all the shit that used to bug me with Under the Dome as well, where it's just like that's all elided. And then it sort of just becomes this like philosophical exploration, which is less interesting to me than something that's like more grounded or down to earth, or, you know, even if there were like 12 people in her town that had the same situation, it would be more like Last Man on Earth, I guess. But it would get it closer to me to like grounding it in something that's not just a thought experiment, I guess.
I think you don't like it because the lead character had an opportunity to fly first class and she didn't.
She
parked it at the back of the plane. I did not care for that either. I will tell you freely.
That was a weird choice. I will give it that. I will give you guys that. Because I feel like every choice that Vince Gilligan makes is all for a reason. Mm-hmm. It's like it's like writing a short story. It's like if you keep mentioning the color brown, there's a reason the color brown, like that means something.
Yeah.
I can accept that there's an episode where they take it too far, but like I loved that during the whole, oh, this has just happened and now Carol has to deal with it, that it was literally without dialogue for so long. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you can't just sit there and like be on your phone while you're, you know, or like doing dishes or whatever. You have to watch to know what's happening. It's not like just radio.
Yeah.
What I really liked though was when they got the group of people together in the second episode, mm-hmm. and now it's like you're seeing like, oh, like I see why people who did not participate in the joining, I still have my family, and like Carol has none.
Right.
And so she's really an outsider. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a nice way to put out, here's several different arguments for enjoying what's going on. Mm-hmm. One of them is I get to have a bunch of ladies fly with me in Air Force One.
Yeah, totally.
So, you know, from the most base to like, well, my family is still around. I still have them and they mm-hmm. are still my family, you know, until Carol basically shits on that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, because it's like your tween son is also a gynecologist, like answers questions to that effect. But I had some issues with that gathering taking place when it did in the timeline. It was like, what, 2 days later?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I just don't think everybody else has processed this to this degree and then had, in some cases, like 12 hours of travel time. Like, I didn't quite buy that. I don't understand how supply chain works for the hive mind. Like, mm-hmm. I understand that because it is a hive mind, it can kind of put out a signal to whoever is near whatever supply is needed. But if they still won't step on a bug, like, I mean, I just have questions about the timeline that I felt like either people had accepted answers that we didn't get to hear mm-hmm. too quickly.
Yeah.
This is true of almost any apocalyptic drama that it's like, but how? But then? But, mm-hmm. you know, again, the problem with that is that something like The Last of Us, which like you get the sense that the creators aren't totally sure how off book they can go
right.
from the yeah. game. So they're very careful to just like not even raise any questions that they can't answer definitively and mm-hmm. like put it in the show Bible.
Yeah.
If that's not done, especially by someone as smart and sort of like has every corner nailed down as Gilligan. Mm-hmm. And then you're like watching these beautiful scenes shot at the airport. And it's like, you know, now I have a little too much time to think about how some of this doesn't totally track.
Yeah. Ray Sehorn as president of acting. Obviously, we are all on board with this. We agree. It frequently required her in Better Call Saul to portray sort of coiled and simmering fury versus just like screaming like she is, including on the poster for Pluribus. What do we think of seeing her get to like let loose more here, Jeff?
I was pleased that it was so off the beaten track that it wasn't just like another drama set in the real world mm-hmm. because there was a part of me that was like, I don't know how much I want to invest in that. That it's so like wild. I find her reactions, you know, Vince Gilligan loves to underwrite things. Like, I'm going to give you the bare minimum of stuff and the clues are all there.
Yeah.
And so I think maybe some of that is is a result of that. I found like when she got on the phone with the Secretary of Agriculture, Undersecretary of Agriculture, her first reaction,
Yep. Yeah.
The whole like society is falling apart. What happened to my girlfriend or wife? She's just very easy to get on board with and feel like, oh, this is a real person going through this. So I want to get deeper into enjoying this performance, but I'm not given enough morsels. Her performance is really great. And I also really, just to talk about like sort of the meta of the show, like the fact that if she gets very upset, it has these consequences is a really cool twist. And that the consequence is the last time you got upset, 11 million people died is like crazy. That's like a crazy like trigger to build into this whole concept. But I enjoy that because it was so unexpected. Her like basically short-circuiting the one woman seemed, but then it was like, oh, it's everybody, was like a really cool thing, because like there's a lot of questions I have that I find are like, oh, they won't kill anything. It's like, okay, so like we're going to run out of food at some point, right? So I'm just curious to see how these things pan out. And of course, if they don't add up to something, I will be surprised because of who it is. You know, I've gone down this road with plenty of shows where I'm like fully in. And then it's like you get to a point where you're like, come on, answer it. Like, you know, so we'll see. We'll see.
Well, I can say the supply chain and food questions do get addressed in the first 7 episodes. Okay. So that's something to look forward to.
I mean, it's definitely trying to do a lot of things about like sort of larger comments on moral relativism, on I don't know what the word is, but like sort of impersonality of large numbers and what that means in times of war and like the abstraction of people into statistics and AI and all of that stuff. But I think it's not necessarily like hanging a light on it and underlining it and then being like, look, this is what we're saying about whatever capital I issue. But I have to agree with Tara that like kind of leeching it of a specific point of view, like it, the dish needs that acid, and it's, I don't know, kind of like an inadvertent comment on Apple TV's unwillingness to ever have it, that it's, you know, that it's a show about hive mind that doesn't have it. But I'm definitely going to keep watching because Gilligan and Seahorn are both great at the ordinary person in extraordinary circumstances story. So we'll see what happens, I guess.
Got a lot of shows. It's a great time for shows.
It's time to go around the dial. First up, Tara.
Yes, I watched NBC's only new sitcom this fall, which is Stumble, not counting The Paper, which, because that's a Peacock show, they're just borrowing. Jen Lyon from Claws in Stumble plays Courtney, the wildly successful cheer coach at Sammy Davis Senior Junior College in Texas. Almost immediately in the pilot, she gets fired for drinking at a party with her cheerleaders, but is soon offered a job at Hedleston Junior College in Oklahoma, 80 miles away, which she and her husband Boone, played by Taron Killam, agree she can get to in 15 minutes or so. When Courtney arrives, the squad consists of one girl, Madonna, played by Ariana Davis, who is heavy, but also an amazing gymnast, but also has narcolepsy. Courtney recruits more unlikely squad members from around the community, like DeMarcus, Jarrett, Austin Brown, a showboating football player on the team that Boone coaches, who quits the team when he gets scolded one too many times for his end zone celebrations and realizes when Courtney approaches him that what he really likes about football is dancing, being obnoxious, and having everyone pay attention to him, meaning his true sport was probably cheer all along. The show was created by Jeff Astroff and Liz Astroff, formerly of Trial and Error, which this will remind you of a lot, starting with It's a Mockumentary, also because Kristen Chenoweth is in it as Courtney's former assistant coach, Tammy Istiny, which is spelled is tiny, and there's a recurring joke about her being too short for anything but the top of her head to appear in a camera frame. Hedleston is a quirky small town. Their largest employer is a candy button factory. So every time there's an establishing shot of a different colored cloud of candy emission hanging over the town. They also love to make a cutaway joke and then make it approximately 70 more times, as with the clip of the injury that ended Moon's career as a football player and also gave him a permanent injury in the head, but I've seen the first two episodes. They both contain a spectacular cheer routine. Obviously, I'm in for that. What I was less excited to see is that one of the executive producers is Monica Aldama, the junior college cheer coach.
I was going to ask about that.
Yep. She's was made famous in the Netflix reality show Cheer that everyone was obsessed with for a minute until several key figures in it were named in legal proceedings of various kinds, including Aldama, who was sued in 2023 by a former cheerleader who claimed that after she was sexually assaulted by a fellow cheerleader, Aldama tried to cover it up. Her son was also arrested last year for multiple counts of possessing images of child sexual assault. Incredibly, she has managed to avoid having either of these incidents added to her Wikipedia page, but it did not take a lot of Googling to be reminded of those. So even though Lion is her usual hilarious and charming self, and even though Kara has been put into making Courtney and Boone's marriage fun and loving and not the typical bitch wife henpecked husband vibe that one tends to see in sitcoms, and even though the cheer choreography and performance is really good, it might be hard for potential audience members who followed all of the scandals of Cheer to want to get on board with a show from which Aldama stands to profit personally. So sorry if you were excited about the show and didn't know any of that, but NBC isn't going to tell you, so that job falls to me, Captain Killjoy. Sorry. For my plug, I'm going to point everyone to the official Taskmaster podcast, which had Paul F. Tompkins on as a guest this week. He is, don't get excited, he has not been cast in the show. He's just commentating on episode 8 or 9. I forget where they are. So the link to that on YouTube is in the show notes. He was actually in England and got to go and record it in the caravan, which is very sweet. And I'm also going to remind everyone to get in your Would You Rather prompts, Tara@extrahotgreat.com. We'll put that in the show notes as well. We want to hear from you. Make us consider some insane situation and tell you what we would do.
All right, Jeff, what have you been watching recently?
I've been watching tons of documentaries, it turns out. Hit the John Candy one, which the first 5 minutes of it totally destroyed me. Because it was literally like Dan Aykroyd's eulogy at his funeral. And I was just like, this is too much. This is killing me. And so then it was recommended, like the Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling. I was like, I had forgotten, first of all, how much I had seen Gary Shandling stand up and how much of it I remembered like verbatim. Mm-hmm. And how funny he was and how good It's Gary Shandling's Show and Larry Sanders, how good both of those were. Mm-hmm. He's such a weird guy and his upbringing is so horribly tragic. It's hard to imagine that there's not somebody in comedy that you respect who is like on camera talking about how great Gary Shandling was and how much he helped them and stuff. And it's also just a really great reminder of how good those two shows are. Really entertaining watch and very funny and very touching. And also goes into exactly why the movie that he made with Mike Nichols was so terrible, which was day one, they were not on the same page and neither one wanted to do it anymore. And that was mm-hmm. day one of shooting. Oops. And so, yeah, just not the right mix. Anyway, it's a very fun documentary. Fun. Like, it's just very entertaining and just filled with all kinds of interesting comedy stuff. And I highly recommend it.
Awesome.
Oh, and then do I plug something now?
Yeah.
Come listen to my ridiculous podcast I do with Brooke Dillman called Nine Chickweed Rage, where we look at the comic strip called Nine Chickweed Lane, which is horrible, drawn by Brooke McEldowney, who is America's greatest living monster. His art is terrible. The composition is terrible almost universally, and the jokes are non-existent. And what better way to enjoy that than to listen to people describe it to you? So, Nine Chickweed Rage.
All right, Sarah D. Bunting, what do you got?
Speaking of monsters, Who Hired Hitman? ? Is a show. I reviewed it earlier this week on bestevidence.fyi, and it is pretty much exactly what you think based on that blunt force title. It is stories of murders for hire. Naturally, it is an investigation discovery program, so mostly standard ID product, and you do not have to stop what you're doing and run to watch its unparalleled genius. This is definitely like a strong B- at best, but I did like some things about the show. Maybe this is a happier living through lowered expectations thing, but
I found that it does understand the limitations of its medium and its subgenre, and it works within them, but it does a couple of things differently, like very stylized reenactments that don't really even reenact anything. And the reenactors are looking directly into the camera and like smirking at times, but they're in focus and there's like not a wit about them, but at least an acknowledgement that even in a dark, tragic murder story, funny shit happens, haha, and peculiar, and you don't have to over-indicate somberness every second. And it's not phoning it in. I failed to come up with this comp in time to write the review, but I came up with it eventually, so here it is. It's like a particularly well-executed pizza from Domino's. Like, basically, it's what you expected, and it's never going to be fantastic, but someone on the line took the time to distribute the green pepper evenly and pick off the slimy bits. And yeah, like, it's Domino's, but someone cares about their work. Great. Thank you. That's heartening, I guess. Anyway, not a must watch, as noted, but it does air Tuesday nights on ID. It will hit HBO Max the next day if that's for you. And I would let the whole series just bank and then craft or write holiday cards in front of it next month. It's like not quite good enough to watch on a weekly basis. Just save it and do another chore in front of it. For my plugs, I did write about it on Best Evidence, and that link will be in the show notes. And on another topic totally, things are still weird and hard economically, and they're going to be that way for a while. And so pethelpfinder.org might have some resources for you if you are struggling to feed or care for or get vet care for your pets. We'll link that in the show notes as well. And if you're not struggling, but you want to help somebody who is, they have a donation button as well. So check that out in the show notes.
All right, coming up on Extra Extra Hot Great this Friday, it is time for the November Forcening, and the show is The Expanse. You got to watch The Expanse, they say, and so we have to.
In Jada's voice.
That is available to club members. If you're not a club member and you want to hear that, visit extrahotgreat.com/club to join. You can join on Patreon or on Apple Podcasts. And then regardless of that, come back here in 1 week's time, EHG Prime. We're going to be talking about The Beast in Me with Stephanie Early Green, she of the green screen. And for my plug-ish of sorts, if you on our Discord, you may notice that we have restarted the Winter Gift Exchange program.
Yes.
We did the first one last year. Thank you, Renzi, for setting that up and being our admin. And if you want to participate, you do need to be on Discord. But if you want to participate and perhaps the moths are coming out of your wallet, we have lots of people volunteering to cover your costs for the gift exchange so that you may participate. So there's lots of people in there. There's probably already a dozen people saying, hit me up. So I don't think we're going to have any trouble covering that. If you want to play, have some fun, somebody will pick up the tab for your, you know, $15 to $20 gift to somebody else, and you can spread the warm and fuzzies. So thank you once again, Rinzi, for setting that up, and get yourself to Discord if you want to take advantage. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting today is Mr. Jeff Drake.
Okay, guys, two unintentional things. One, that my canon selection was about an alien takeover and that the show it came from was primarily written by the creator. I knew that we were going to talk about Pluribus, but I had not seen anything about it yet, and I picked this episode, which, let's just get into it. Look, it's no secret I'm old. I almost always bring in a very old TV episode for the canon. That said, I'm not submitting the Dick Van Dyke Show Season 2, Episode 20, It May Look Like a Walnut, today strictly out of nostalgia. And I'm not doing it out of a fear of bringing in something newer because I might be exposed to newfangled stories on my electric story box. This episode has consistently been ranked in the top 20 TV episodes of all time. It has one of TV's most iconic visual moments, Mary Tyler Moore sliding out of a closet on a tidal wave of walnuts. But I know that doesn't mean it's a slam dunk for the EHG canon. Now, by this point in all of our TV watching lives, we've seen dozens, if not hundreds, of Twilight Zone inspired television episodes. I mean, the treehouses of horror alone. But I have to believe this was the very first. I mean, it originally aired in early 1963 on CBS, the same year and same network as the fourth season of the original Twilight Zone. Of course, The Twilight Zone wasn't that big in the ratings by this point. It was only doing a 19 or 20 Nielsen rating, or about 2.5 times what Game 7 of this year's World Series got. Anyway, I would argue that this episode, the Twilight Zone homage, is still one of the cleverest of the bunch and is far and away the most economical. I mean, they spent no money on the sci-fi aspects of this concept without hurting the homage or the comedy. In fact, they used the low to no budget approach to heighten the comedy. Dick Van Dyke gets a big laugh out of making it appear his thumbs disappeared simply because he was dexterous enough to hide his thumbs behind his hand, even in a close-up. The priciest special effect of the whole episode is the tens of thousands of walnuts Mary Tyler Moore slides out on. That and the tiny chunk of what looks like pyrite that stands in for Absorbitron, the dangerous chemical element from the planet Twilo. The setup is simple. Rob sees a spooky sci-fi movie late one night and recounts the plot to Laura, who hid under her covers too afraid to watch. He teases her enough to make her slightly mad that night, and the next morning wakes up in a world where that movie he saw is now real and he is the last human being on the planet. But is Laura just getting him back for teasing him, or is this just a dream, or is this really happening? Play clip one.
I'm having a dream. Sorry, I'm just having a dream. I'll wake up pretty soon. I know I'm having a dream. That hurt. It never hurts in a dream. Laura, I want you to do me a favor.
Sure, darling.
Go in the bedroom, pull down the covers on my bed and see if I'm there.
Laura, darling, I don't have time for jokes. I have a walnut roast in the oven.
All right. All right, now you win. You and your friends have scared the pants off me, I admit it.
Are you happy?
Have you still got your thumbs?
Yes, I have. There's not much you can do about that, is there? Now, that's enough. Laura! Laura?
Mary Tyler Moore does a really great job of being creepy in that Stepford Wife way in this episode. All the details from the movie that Rob teased Laura with come into play. The fact that Twilowites eat only walnuts, that they drink water instead of breathing air, that they have two sets of eyes, one in the front and one in the back hidden by their hair, that humans who get exposed to Absorbitron lose their thumbs and their imagination, and that their leader Kolak looks like Danny Thomas. These details are funny enough in Rob's initial description to Laura, but each gets a moment to score once again, once Rob is fully in, as he says it, the Twilo Zone. Like in the scene where Danny Thomas strolls into his office as the alien emissary, Kolak. Play clip two.
I beg pardon. Could you tell me where I might find Robert Petrie?
Who are you?
Who do you think I am?
Danny Thomas?
What is a Danny Thomas?
Never get tired of what is a Danny Thomas. Danny Thomas was a huge star at that time and a fun cameo, but a pretty easy get for the show since he produced it. Well, that and like everything else on the CBS comedy slate that season. There's a funny bit in this scene where Danny Thomas / Kolak, with his back turned to Rob, notices a stain on Rob's tie. Rob asks how he can see it from there, and Danny Thomas says the classic, "I have perfect 20/20/20/20 vision." But then we get another comedy moment from this same concept when Rob rushes home and confronts Laura. Play clip three.
You're a Twilowite.
Robert, do you know you have a stain on your tie?
Yeah, Kolak. How did you know?
I do wish you wouldn't point. It's so impolite.
Laura!
My name is not Laura. It's Lolak. Lolak of Twilo. I see you!
Without looking at him, Laura reaches behind her and parts her hair right in front of him. And we don't see the back of her head ever, but just Rob's facial reaction, which is hilariously horrified. Mary Tyler Moore has one of my favorite lines right after that scene where Rob reaches toward the back of her head and she screams, "My eyes! Don't touch my eyes!" Overall, what works so great for this episode is the tonal balance between slightly creepy and very funny. It also doesn't hurt that Richie, one of television's all-time terrible child actors, only has a brief appearance. In the end, of course, it was a dream. Rob and Laura both wake up screaming. They tumble out of bed, or should I say beds, and are both still shaken by their nightmare. Play clip 4.
What are you doing here?
What are you?
I had a nightmare and fell out of bed.
Oh, I heard a scream. Did you scream?
Oh, I must have screamed. Oh, what a nightmare. What a night. I dreamed that I was a Twilight. And that I lost my sense of humor and my thumbs. Oh!
I dreamt that Danny Thomas was chasing me and throwing walnuts at me, and every place he hit me, I'd lose a thumb and grow an eye.
Blah!
One last great joke at the very end, one of my all-time favorites from the show, where Rob and Laura are trying to watch TV to get back to sleep. So they flip through the channels, finding only terrible choices, including an exercise show and some other show. Clip 5.
1, 2, and there. 1, 2, and there.
Who in the world does exercises at this time of night?
This guy does.
Darling, who's that good-looking man with the beard?
No.
Would you guess that there are 200,000 bumblebees on this man's face?
Look, this isn't the funniest episode of Dick Van Dyke, but it might be the most clever and fun. It pulled off a full-on Twilight Zone episode without resorting to gimmicky special effects to do it. Instead, it relied on the comedic talents of the cast, the cleverness of the writing, and somewhere around, I'm guessing, 35,000 walnuts. It was, of course, written by Carl Reiner, and here's a crazy stat. This was the 20th episode of the second season, the 51st episode of the show overall. It was also the 33rd episode written by Carl Reiner. And if that's not enough to convince you, it also contains an amazing throwaway line. Danny Thomas put nuts in my hat. There it is. Accept it or don't. It may look like a walnut from the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Thank you, Jeff. Sarah, why don't you go first?
I would love to. I had never seen this before. I always love Grandpa Jeff's old-timey presentations because it exposes me to the heritage gramophone television of the previous... Okay, I'll stop it with that. This was fascinating to watch just from like a build standpoint because he's going on and on about like the plot of this movie and the Twilians and where their eyes are and all this stuff with walnuts. And you're like, you know, I know all of this is... important. So you're mostly watching it to like see where it's going to go, or are they just stalling because the sitcom back then was not 20 minutes. It was like 25 and a half minutes. And are they filling? And you could see that in maybe two spots, but really it's pretty well paced and you're just looking forward to seeing it unfold. And then from there, starting the next morning, it actually does, like, for a show that is a sitcom comedy legend, it does such a good job of introducing this ambiguity as to what really is happening. Is it a dream? Are they fucking with him? And the way that the entire show, as it's built, given Rob's workplace, like how ripe it is for misunderstanding like this, and then to just have Danny Thomas come in as Kolak, it really sustains that, like, well, but is Laura fucking with him? Like, are his coworkers fucking with him? What's going on? And then, like, you only really figure it out when he does. And it's pretty impressive in terms of the build of an average sitcom episode and mapping it onto Twilight Zone episode. And Carl Reiner, we really do miss him. Nobody did it better. And seeing that credit come up, it's not like it was a surprise. I knew of his involvement, but it was like, oh yeah, uh-huh, there he is. Jeff is absolutely right. Mary Tyler Moore's like sort of creepy simpering Kolakian chuckle on the phone and then it just going dead is like, this is a black and white television comedy program from the 1960s. Are the little hairs on my arms standing up? What is happening here? Really a delight to watch and consume, but also to sort of flip it over and look at the back and see how it was made at the same time. Thank you so much for this presentation. And for my final note, looking at the production design on this show is so much fun. Like the head board sort of like inset in the wall that there's like an ashtray on every surface in their home, even though I don't think we even see anyone smoking. And they had magic eight balls already. I thought that was a 70s thing, but there's one on his desk. So yeah, this was a delight. Thank you so much for bringing it to us. Who's next?
I'll go next. I don't have a ton to add. You covered it so well. I mean, I do think the fun of the episode, like you said, is the ambiguity, but because it feels like the show has established by this point, it's possible that Laura would have gone to all this trouble to mess with him. Like it's, and that's why it takes so long for you to figure out what's actually happening, because she does seem like the kind of wife who would be like game to do it. His coworkers seem like the kind of coworkers who would be like, totally just play along. You also don't need to have watched a ton of the show, which I haven't, to get in the moment when everyone is walking out of Rob's office and after Mel has just come in and he and Buddy leave arm in arm and like the reaction from the audience is like, oh, okay, they're not friends. Got it. Like, that was, you know, you put it together from context clues. But Jeff, you are right to say how ingenious it is to build this whole sci-fi gimmick without spending any money on anything except walnuts, truly. The thumb bit is so funny. It's perfectly executed. As the episode is winding down, we see all the other characters are doing it too. Every bit of it is, like Sarah said, it's just perfectly built, and it could have gone either way and I would have been happy with either outcome of like what this, this was, if it was the dream like we saw or just an elaborate gag, because Rob should learn. When you're sharing a room with someone else and they ask you to go watch a show in the living room, leave so they can sleep. Sleep is important.
I think we should bring back the theremin for unironic sci-fi scoring needs. Orange juice glasses were super tiny back in the 60s. Not acceptable. Yeah. What, you want a thimble of orange juice with your breakfast? Why even bother? My favorite joke nobody mentioned is when Van Dyke runs into the comedy writer's office and says, oh, I'm sorry I'm late. And everybody else not missing a beat. I'm sorry I'm short. I'm sorry I'm single.
So good.
The only problem I had this episode is I did think it took too long in the bedroom with the movie review and teasing. I thought that felt like it was almost half the episode, where it really should have been sort of the first beat of the first act. But it does pay off. And I think everybody's right that the magic of this episode is you really don't know which one it is, which one of these probable paths it is. Although I would have liked to see a Dick Van Dyke show in the universe where it turns out the aliens were real and they had to continue the show based on that. But that's not what we got. What we did get was very funny, really good writing, and to think that this was happening basically contemporary with the Twilight Zone is pretty neat, because they nailed certain elements of that, marrying it with like a 50s sci-fi sort of vibe to it. So I did enjoy that, and I did not realize that's where the walnut slide was from.
No, I've seen that clip so many times.
There it is. Mm-hmm. There's that thing.
And speaking of the walnut thing, just a tiny sidebar. There was a time when I worked at NBC doing a promo, and it was an inside NBC tape that we were doing. And I pitched a joke for Jessica Alba to do. She had misunderstood something, like, America wants this. She was like, America wants that? I thought America wanted pancakes. And she was in a room with 1,000 pancakes. First of all, my boss hated it and didn't want it in. It accidentally got sent to her, and she, because he was like, she should do a joke where she's sexy. It's like, that's okay, that's not a joke, but great. It accidentally went to her, and she was like, I want to do that. I'm sure she was like, great, it's not a joke where I'm just sexy. My point is, 1,000 pancakes on camera doesn't look like that many pancakes. So when I see all these walnuts, I'm like, 35,000, it might be 150,000. I mean, to make it look like so many things. And I can send you guys the picture of me in a room with the pancakes, because I was like, this is amazing. When I watch this now, I'm just like, wow, they had to get so many fucking walnuts.
And she has so much walnut like detritus on her in the once she climbs out of the pile that they just didn't take off her, that I just found delightful. I was like, oh, it's her people.
He also says he messes up a line that stays in. He's trying to say, I need to get my thumbs back. And he says, I need to get my thumb backs.
Oh.
All right, let's put this to the official vote. Sarah D. Bunting, what say you?
Well, I've still got my thumbs and they're both up. Yay. Yes, please, for this one.
Tara?
Yay for me as well.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes too. So...
The Dick Van Dyke Show, Season 2, Episode 20, It May Look Like a Walnut. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Gray Camp.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time to discover who is our winner and loser of the week. Tara has this week's winner.
I do. It's also kind of a loser, though. The winner is All's Fair, which has become Hulu's biggest scripted drama launch in 3 years, despite uniformly terrible reviews for it. This is the legal drama that Ryan Murphy created for Hulu, starring, among others, Niecy Nash, Glenn Close, Naomi Watts, and Kim Kardashian as a lawyer. I have not watched this. It sounds demented. All critics absolutely hate it. I will, though, give a sub-winner to whoever is running All's Fair's socials, because The Hollywood Reporter, as we're recording this yesterday on Monday, published a story called All's Fair and the New Television of Nothingness. And they retweeted the link with a screenshot of an old Lady Gaga tweet. Uh-oh, guys, the art police is here, which is pretty funny. I have to give them that. Not bad. Anyway, All's Fair. I'm not watching it out of protest because TV needs to stop making garbage shows like this. And I'm part of the problem because I watch Sirens just like everybody else.
And Sarah, who is our loser of the week?
Well, psychics, ChatGPT, and Kim Kardashian. Because Kim Kardashian failed the California bar exam. While not starring in All's Fair, she failed the California bar exam. Mm-hmm. That's A. B, I mean, and that's a pretty hard one. Like, they're all very difficult, but California is, like, notoriously difficult. Maybe she shouldn't have used ChatGPT to study for it. That's B. Or C, relied on the word of psychics because apparently, quote, several told her that she would pass the bar exam. Like, you know, they had a 50-50 shot, girl. Yeah, so, sure. I don't know.
Well, speaking
there's
about
a segue, Dave.
Yep. Speaking about having a 50-50 shot, girl, do you know what time it is?
Cave time.
Cave time.
Welcome back. This is the second game time of the season. The scores are Tara with one, Sarah with nothing, Value Guess with nothing. Today we are playing Which Came First from Miles, who earns himself an extra credit topic of his choosing plus a free shirt at the EHG store at throughmethods.com. How well can you remember important, sometimes not important, TV moments in the context of real life important, also sometimes not important, historical events? In this game, Dave will read out one TV event slash show name and one historical event. All players will decide, on all questions, which one they think happened first. Once everyone has an answer, every player will either say TV if you think that happened first, or historical if you think that happened first. 2 points earned for each correct answer. Anyone who doesn't get the correct answer can still win a point by giving me either the year of the TV event or the historical event as a consolation prize. So you can pick up a point if you get the first part wrong.
Okay.
All right. Let's throw it to Picky. This is just going to, what is this going to do? I don't know what this is going to do. Let's just throw it to Picky. We'll figure it out later. Yeah.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. If it comes into play,
I knew it was going to be me.
Is Jeff, Sarah, Tara. But once again, we are all answering on all things. I'm going to ask you to lock in. I'm going to ask you not to change your answer and be honest, even though I think sometimes you guys do change the answer. It's a suspicion
How
I have.
Dare
Sometimes
you?
There's a pause, and I'm like, why is that pause there for any other reason that they're considering changing the answer that they said they locked in? But I trust you guys.
Some of us don't write that fast.
It doesn't. It doesn't sound like you trust us, though. I love that you did that whole preamble. Then you're like, but I trust you guys.
Because I don't, Jeff. I don't. I think you're all cheating all the time. In a better world, I would have had you all make cards that said TV or historical, but we're not in that better world. All right. 15 questions, no steel mills, no gross worth equalizer challenge zones. Are we ready to play Which Came First?
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
Sure.
So remember, everybody's going to lock in their answers. Hands up when you're locked in. Which came first? The TV event of Diane Leaves on Cheers
or the historical event, the Berlin Wall falls? Which came first? Everybody's locked in. All right, so we'll start off with Jeff.
I'm going to say historical.
All right. Sarah?
TV.
And Tara?
TV.
All right. Two TVs are correct. Woo! Jeff did not get it right, which means, Jeff, you get to try to pick up a point by giving me your choice, year of either Diane Leaves or the Berlin Wall Falls. Just the calendar year.
1987.
Is a year, but what are you applying it to?
Oh, I had to apply it to one of them.
Yes, they took place in different years. Do you understand the premise of this game?
I do, but I thought I could just say a year, and if I got neither one, then I would get it.
1987, but is that for TV or?
I said Cheers.
You are correct. 1987 is when that happened. That is good for 1 point. So the score is 2-2-2-1. Next scenario coming up. The TV event is Big Dies from a Peloton workout on And Just Like That. The historical event is the Notre Dame fire. Which came first? Tara is locked in. Sarah's locked in. Jeff is locked in. Sarah D. Bunting, what's your answer here?
History. Historical.
Tara?
Yeah, historical.
Jeff?
Historical.
You are all correct. That was 2019 versus 2021 for the bike heart attack. Next up, Ken Jennings' 74-game win streak ends on Jeopardy, or the iPod is introduced. The iPod. Tara, what's your answer here?
Historical.
All right.
TV.
Historical.
Two correct. The iPod was first. Jeff, you got it wrong. So give me the year of either Ken Jennings' Jeopardy streak coming to an end, or the year when the iPod was introduced. I will give you a clue. They both start with a two.
A 2-0 is what I heard. And I'm going to say iPod 2005.
Jeopardy's streak came to an end 2004. The iPod was introduced 2001.
Oh, wow. Okay.
All right. TV event is Puck Gets Kicked Off the Real World versus the historical event Clinton's I Did Not Have Sexual Relations with That Woman speech. Which came first? Everybody's locked in. All right, Jeff.
Historical.
Historical. Sarah.
TV.
Tara.
Yep, TV.
TV is correct. It was the first. All right, Jeff, chance to pick up another point. Clinton's speech or the real world kicking off of Puck? Name the year for either one of those for a point.
Let's go with Clinton.
Yes.
And let's say...
Where were you when you first heard that speech?
1997.
Very so close. 98. January 98. So closer than you've ever been before. All right. TV event is Marsha gets hit in the nose by a football in the Brady Bunch, or the moon landing. Which came first? Sarah D. Bunting, which came first?
Historical.
Tara, which came first?
Historical.
Jeff, which came first?
Historical.
You are all correct. The moon landing was 69, Brady Bunch 73. The Red Wedding from Game of Thrones, or Justin Trudeau becomes Canadian Prime Minister. Good luck.
Oh, fuck.
This is one of two Canadian questions, so I think maybe Miles might be Canadian. All right. Hey, look, most of the time you win. Give the Canadians one or two questions. Here we go. Sarah
DeMunt. I'm tired of winning.
TV.
TV. Tara.
I think Trudeau. Historical.
Jeff.
TV.
TV is the correct answer. It came first. So Tara, Trudeau becomes prime minister or the Red Wedding? Give me the year for either of those.
I think Red Wedding. I'm going to say 2014. Back.
2013. Yes, in the summer of 2013.
Game of Thrones.
Trudeau was 2015. Sinead O'Connor rips up the Pope on Saturday Night Live, or OJ's Ford Bronco chase. Immediately, everybody is locked in. Jeff Drake, Tari Ariano, let's start off with you.
TV.
Jeff.
Historical.
Sarah.
TV.
And TV is correct. Jeff, you're once again in the year hot seat. All right, SNL ripping of the Pope's picture or Bronco Chase. Give me the year for either.
Ford Bronco Chase, 1990.
Oh, way off. The Pope pick, 1992. The OJ Chase, 1994. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get back to it.
I just want to reiterate that I'm guessing on every single one of these.
The TV event is Felicity Cuts Her Hair on Felicity. The historical event, guys, mm-hmm. is Jerry Halliwell leaves the Spice Girls, which created a whole crisis in the EU. All right. Sarah D. Bunting, what do you got here?
Historical.
All right. That is one for the Spice Girls, Tara.
Yeah, historical.
Jeff?
Even though I know how this is going to play out, since the two of you have picked the one that I didn't pick, yeah. I'm going to say TV.
All right. Well, they're correct and you're not.
Yeah. That's the one I picked in my head. Dave, I'm not cheating is what I'm saying.
You're doing a very good job at not cheating.
Thank you.
Felicity Cut Her Hair year or Spice Girls Lose Ginger Spice year?
I don't even know what decade either of these happened in. I'm going to say the Spice Girls one. I'm going to say 1997.
You're very close. 1998.
Oh, that was 96. All right.
All right. This will take us into our score break. Comma first, we've got on TV the first millionaire winner on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, or Enron declares bankruptcy in the real world. All right. Everybody's locked in. Let's go to Tara first.
TV.
Jeff?
Historical.
And Sarah.
Historical.
Oh, Tara's the only winner here.
Oh.
TV was first. All right, so now we got two guessing. You can do whatever you want. You just can't provide the same guess as the last person. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire's first million-dollar winner year, or Enron declares bankruptcy in what year?
Okay, I'm going to do millionaire. 97 is what I say for...
All right, 97. You are incorrect. Sarah?
Oh, shit. Well, I went with 95 for Enron.
Super not correct.
We're
Millionaire was 1999.
Damn,
Enron
really?
Was 2001.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, wow. I thought that was a 90s thing. All right.
All right. Let's get the scores, please.
Okay. Jeff has 7. Sarah and I just got re-tied up with 16 apiece.
All right.
I have 7 more points than I thought I would get.
6 questions left. TV event is Springfield gets a monorail on The Simpsons. Historical event is Amazon.com is founded. Everybody is locked in. Let's start with somebody. Jeff. Yep.
TV.
TV. Sarah D. Bunting.
Historical.
Tara.
Historical, but I'm not confident either.
Oh,
how
neither. The tables have turned. Jeff is the only right answer here.
Oh.
The Simpsons Springfield Gets a Monorail was before Amazon. All right, so let's start with Sarah D. Bunting. I need what you're picking in the year. You don't have to lock in. Just tell me. Tara just can't choose the exact combo you chose.
Oh, okay. I'm going to go Amazon 96.
All right, Amazon 96, Tara?
Simpsons 93.
Simpsons 93 is correct. Amazon 96 is not off by 2 years, 94.
Wow.
All right, we've got on TV, Fonzie jumps the shark on Happy Days. And in the real world, we have Watergate. All right, everybody's locked in, Tara?
Historical.
Jeff?
Historical.
Sarah?
Historical.
You are all correct. 72 versus 77 for the shark. Bob lets Tina try driving in the cold open of Bob's Burgers.
Mm-hmm. Great
that one. Versus the real historical event of the first episode of the Serial podcast. Jeff Drake, you better get this one right.
I don't work on that show.
But put a roof over your house.
Yeah.
All right. Let's start with... who did we start with last time?
Me, but I think you skipped Sarah.
I don't care. It doesn't matter. All right. Jeff, what do you got?
I'm going to go with TV.
TV, Sarah.
I think it was historical.
Tara.
I do too, but I think they're really close.
Oh, it's the summer of Jeff. Jeff is the only one correct. It was Bob's Burgers coming in first. All right,
I get to stay in my house.
Yay! Give me which one you're guessing in the year.
I'll guess cereal, and I think it was 2014.
All right, Sarah D. Bunting, you can do anything else except that combo.
Bob's Burgers 2012, I guess, because I know Tara's right about the other thing. So.
Whoa!
Bob's Burgers 2012, just at the end of Serial Podcast, is 2014.
I was like, surely Tara will pick Bob's. Oh. Yeah.
All right. TV event is Ellen Comes Out on Ellen. Historical event is, might be playing into Sarah D. Bunting's strength, Major League Baseball strike begins, leading to the first cancellation of the World Series in 90 years. Begins.
Mm.
All right. Sarah's locked in. Jeff's locked in. Tara's locked in. Sarah D. Bunting. Which came first?
Historical.
Tara.
Historical?
Jeff.
Historical.
Everybody says historical, and that is the correct answer. That was 1990 what, Sarah?
Four.
Yes. And Ellen was 1997, 3 years later. Everybody gets 2 points there. Two questions left. On TV, Captain Holt yells, "Hot damn!" on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And in historical events, we have John Travolta says Adele Dazeem at the Oscars.
No.
Oh, God.
Jeez.
Shit.
So I assume this is hot damn for the first time. I don't know if he said it. Seems like the kind of thing they probably went back to the well on. All right. Everybody's locked in. Let's start with Jeff.
TV.
TV. All right. Sarah D. Bunting.
This is a total guess, but TV.
Tara.
TV.
You are all incorrect.
Oh. Damn.
The Oscars were 2014.
Shit.
Captain Holt yells, "Hot damn." Oh, I just gave you the answer. Fuck. Oh, wow.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, we'll assist to it.
We all have a point?
No, you cannot all have a point. I fucked up, so everybody has to guess at Captain Holt now. Sorry.
Oh. Okay.
All right, everybody, the year. All right, so let's start with Jeff Drake. What year?
2016.
All right, Sarah, what year?
2017.
Tara, what year?
Was it later in 2014?
No, nothing's the same year.
Okay.
In this game.
Oh, that's good.
Did anyone say 2015 already? Okay, then that.
You are all incorrect. 2018.
Really?
They were trying to lead you to it.
Tara. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Here's the last regulation question. We've got on television the MASH finale, or in history, we've got Terry Fox begins his cross-country marathon of Canada. Here's your second Canadian question. All right, let's start off with Tara.
Historical.
Historical. Jeff.
TV.
Sarah.
Historical.
And the historicals are correct. Jeff, either the MASH finale or Terry Fox's cross-country marathon. Which year?
MASH finale, 1982.
Very close. 1983, February. Just a scooch off. All right, that's regulation. Scores, please.
Oh, my God.
Oh, fuck.
Jeff finished with 15. Sarah had 23. I have 24.
Ooh.
So close. I don't like winning like this.
So close.
I hate it. I hate it.
All right, let's do one last one.
I love it.
For the tiebreaker, for a steel meal for future use, we've got on television Ashley Simpson lip sync episode on Saturday Night Live.
Sure.
And the historical event is Facebook opens to the general public, no longer just university emails. All right, everybody lock in. All right, let's start with Jeff.
TV.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Historical.
And Tara.
TV.
The TVs are correct in giving him two steel meals each, but Sarah will still play the year thing. You can get one steel meal. So,
okay.
SNL year or Facebook opens up year?
I'm going to take Facebook opens up here.
So far, you're right.
2002.
2006.
Seven?
Six.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
September 2006.
Feels like it's always
all right. Nicely done, everybody. But today is Tarth.
Jeff Stone.
Woo.
Tara.
Tara.
And that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We all agreed to talk about the new Vince Gilligan series Pluribus at the same time, which was unsettling, before going around the dial with stops at Stumble, Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling, and Who Hired the Hitman. Jeff found his Dick Van Dyke Show canon submission a tough nut to crack, but crack it he did. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from Miles. Next up, it's the Expanse Forcening on Extra, Extra Hot Great. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariana,
we can tell we're upsetting you.
Sarah D. Bunting.
All that crazy music for a grape?
And Jeff Drake.
I always assume every free donut comes pre-lick.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Grape.
Please turn this program off. It scares me.